Why have I quit my job? Why have I, you know, bought a van? And why am I going to drive around the country? Well, I'm passionate about the idea that you need to be heard. And I want to stitch these stories together across the states. We're going to find the commonalities. And it's going to be really an amazing experience. And I look forward to you joining me on the job.
Still kind of digging that groovy music. Welcome back to Mental Health Today, everybody. It's your host, Ken Stearns, and beautiful Thursday here in Las Vegas. I'm on my journey with the jar, the van you just saw. That was me pontificating 24 months ago, really, what I thought I may find as I traveled across the U.S. I've mentioned on the show many times, the common thread was and is it's maintained itself, though it's got the lead position, which is mental health. And, it continues to impress me with its diversity, its ability to hit everybody. It takes no prisoners, rich and poor. And it's a brutal enemy we're out there fighting against. And this show is really born out of the idea to learn what we can and to kind of document what's going on in the space, especially like a lot of new endeavors, a lot of people with great ideas and passion jumping in and seeing what they can do. And a lot of those are driven from personal experiences. And I have a feeling our next guest, Ben's got some personal experiences to share, and then definitely active in the space. And I love what you're doing, Ben. And thanks for taking time out to be a guest and to kind of share with us what's going on. Happy Thursday.
Yeah, happy Thursday, Ken. It's a beautiful Thursday here in South Carolina, so no complaints on this side. 10 minutes from the beach, no snow. I'm a happy man.
Where are you at in Carolina?
I'm just south of Myrtle Beach in a town called Myrtle's Inlet.
Oh, Myrtle's Inlet. I know. I'm a Gamecock, by the way.
Oh, well, we're more Clemson, but we're not a house divided. I will root for South Carolina.
Okay, I like it. I'm rooting for Clemson when they're not. Yeah, when they're not playing us, I'm rooting for them. Especially some of those games. They had great teams. Anyways,
well, we're going there.
Sorry about that.
No, yeah, that's okay. We're taking the drive upstate. My son's looking at college there, so we'll have our Clemson orange on Monday.
Oh, nice. That's a beautiful campus, though, for sure. Yeah, that's a beautiful place. So it was. Kind of interesting after you had accepted to be a guest, and I think we had to bounce the date one time, my Wi-Fi, and you started another company in between.
Why not?
Oh man, what's that? What's going on? What are you doing in mental health, and how did you get here?
Yeah, Ken. Well, thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for the show. You know, the more we can talk about mental health, the more we can break down the stigma. And my passion is really the two stigma issue. There's the stigma of mental health, which is diagnosis, which goes into talking about it, admitting it, getting help. And then there's treatment. And my passion purpose on the treatment, which we're going to get to, falls within the psychedelic assisted therapy world. Mm-hmm. And I promise certainly you and the audience, we will get there. I think probably best to start with how I got here. I think it's probably a more typical story than I'd like to think it is, but you know, growing up, I'm 45 years old. So growing up, born in the late 70s, grew up in the 80s. I know you're shaking your head. I know. I do it with the youngster. People who say they were born in the 90s. I get it.
Yeah, you youngster. Yeah.
there was a time where you were growing up still where you really didn't talk about your mental health problems.
Yeah.
You had your gender roles, which is if you're a female and you're having problems, you know, you're a woman, you're emotional. If you're a man and you had issues, you had to man up and keep it quiet. And that's just kind of really the way it mostly rolled. And then you couple that with, you know, the just say no generation, and, you know, you take a drug and it's going to fry your brain. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know if you remember, all those pictures, this is your brain on drugs and it's the egg and.
That's the first thing that absolutely first image that comes to mind is an egg on a pan.
Bam. Everybody. Yes.
Bam.
And I bought it. You know, we grew up absolutely, I was terrified of drugs. I'll admit it. I knew a single drug throughout my college life. I've never smoked a cigarette. I admit it. Now I drank alcohol and still do, which is probably a pretty bad drug.
Worst of them all.
Pretty harsh on your body.
Clearly the worst of them all.
And still going strong. And so I grew up in there. So, you know, growing up and having some challenges, you just kind of chalked it up to being, hey, mm-hmm. you know, stiff upper lip, keep it to yourself. Right. And, you know, not going to take any drugs. So you're not going to become part of that Prozac nation of the 90s. You know, we don't do any of that kind of stuff. Right. So you just kind of suffered in silence. And a lot of us did that. Right. And we had sort of not exactly productive ways, you know, of dealing with your issues. And so I would always have, as I got older, I'd always have these highs and lows. And, you know, can you accept the world you live in? And if you always go from high yes. to low, you're like, oh, that's normal. It's normal to go super high and super low. Like, that's what everybody does, right? That's just what
yeah. the world is.
And so kind of carried over to my teens and my 20s. And, you know, during this time, had my challenges, and like we all do with life. And then 10 years ago, I launched Momentum Events with a business partner of mine, a gentleman named Matt Godson, who I'd worked with. And we had a real rough start to the business. We had a lot of challenges. And prior to this, I'd always struggled with mental health. And they would come across as, you know, there would be some anger issues. There'd be, you know, depression issues. And I never really addressed it or treated it. And then over the past 10 years, you know, launching this business, having a lot of struggle, it really pushed me very far. And then I was eventually diagnosed with PTSD, major depressive disorder, and general anxiety disorder.
Whoa.
Right? And the funny part was,
you were carrying around a lot. Like, that's not like little bit of stuff. Like, that's a real full... Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, like had just kind of moment. That's a, like a heavy, that's big news. You've got to make a change in your life.
You would think so. going back to
where or not.
Up in, no.
Yeah, or not,
was,
or not.
It was, right, it was internalized. It was deal with wow. it. It was self-medicate, usually with alcohol, wow. which is not a great treatment protocol. But, you know, Ken, I never knew why I felt this way. I just always felt this way. And, you know, when it was good, it was great. And when it was not good, it was terrible. There was no balance. None.
Wow. I can't good imagine, moments living, were fleeting, I can't imagine moments. Living like that.
Right. You'd have these moments that, you know, were not terrible, but they kind of hung on you for a long time. And it pushed me to really deep, dark places. And I had danced with self-harm for a long period of time.
I would imagine those go hand in hand.
They do. And, you know, I wrote a post, and on my LinkedIn, I have a couple of articles I've written. And one of them, I try to provide detail on what it's like to have a suicidal mindset. Because growing up, you would just think, hey, you're just weak. You know, the weak are the ones that kill themselves. They weren't strong enough to deal with.
Yeah, them, right? Yeah, exactly. That was always the message. Only weak people do that.
Right. And the reality is that's not true. The reality is that you get caught in these loops in your brain and you cannot stop them. And so you start contemplating, what is the only way I can make the pain of these loops in my mind stopping? And you lead to this conclusion, just end it.
It's so fascinating how that works to me.
It's, you know, when you have PTSD, depression, anxiety, you're always living in the past with regret and you're always worrying about the future.
But God.
And what does that do? It works up the engine and you can't stop the merry-go-round.
Yeah, and you create that rut in the brain is kind of that description, right? Where it's just a nice familiar track and you get down in there. And how do you climb out of that after 10 years?
Well, the default mode mechanism, right? That's kind of the psychological term for it. And in my case, I was in that rut for 30 years. And I tried therapy, which was not successful. I eventually tried Western medicine. I was on the SSRIs. I went through that dosing and it was just... Listen, those medicines have a purpose. It was not a solution for me, and I never enjoyed the way I felt on them. And it was rough, but fortunately, you know, I have an amazing wife and family, and, you know, my faith, which is its own interesting journey, which we can get to at some point, but not too dissimilar from your journey, helped keep me from actually going through with anything, fulfilling my desires. And so fast forward to the fall of 18, and I hit my umpteenth breakdown, and I'm like, something's got to change. I got to do something.
Yeah, that's not that, like I was thinking, like, this is not a, you'd have to, the message before where that was, you need to change something.
Right.
And yeah, dang.
And I believe, you know, and God had put in my life, Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind. I searched for a book on mental health, and that was the first one that popped up. And I said, this looks interesting.
Okay.
And I consumed that book in 3 days flat, maybe 4 days. I just could not stop reading it. And if anyone is interested in the world of psychedelics and the history and the culture and the science and the research, that to me is the book you start with. That is the book of Genesis in your psychedelic journey. You start with that one.
I'm sorry. Let's say the name again.
How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan.
Okay.
They made a Netflix 4-part series on it, which I don't think does the book any level of justice. And I know people who are in the series, and I'm not, you know, talking negatively about it, but if you have the time and ability to read or listen,
yeah,
How to Change Your Mind is where you got to start.
I love it. I'll find it and listen to it on my drives.
Yep. And I from that book, Ken,
yep,
I found the rabbit hole of psychedelics.
I mean, this is interesting because you're a super straight kid.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden you're reading a book on psychedelics, and obviously it's striking a chord.
I'm reading a book on drugs and it's so outside of my comfort zone. But the way the book describes individuals who have these mental health disorders, Ken, it cut too close to the bone.
Yeah, I would imagine that's why you consumed it so fast, right? It's just so relative.
To your point, Ken, one of the things in the book, which I'll always remember, is Pollan's talking about the default mode mechanism. And he says, imagine you go up to a hill to ski and you go down a pathway.
Okay.
You develop a little rut, right? A little rut.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's say you keep on going back and you like that pathway, or that pathway was comfortable. You go it a little bit more. Then you keep on going up every moment of your life and you wind up having deeper and deeper ruts. And now even when you don't want to be in that path.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. There's only one. Yeah. You're falling into it.
Right. And he said, what psychedelic therapy does, it gives you a fresh coat of powder on the mountain.
Love it.
And when I read that, I was like, I need a fresh coat of powder. Cause
yeah, one more. Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, and it's, you can just say it. It's God's medicine, man. It's sitting here, you know, it's a compound in the earth growing up. It's part of it's a third kingdom. I mean, people don't even recognize that it's not a plant. It's not an animal. Neither.
There are naturally occurring, there are synthesized, but these medicines, which, you know, to be clear, they are not for everybody. They are not a silver bullet. They're not a one pill and you're good, which we'll talk about.
No, but definitely not.
The breakthrough potential for a variety of mental health and other neurological issues.
Yeah, yeah.
We haven't seen the tip of the iceberg in the potential for these medicines at all. And so I spent the next 10 months consuming everything I could about psychedelics. I read research papers. I followed TED Talks. And then, Ken, I just started randomly calling all of these pioneers in the industry. Can you tell me more? Can you tell me more? And you know what?
Oh, really?
They all gave me their time. People who are, you know, leaders of the field gave me time to talk about their research, their company, and their compound. Was miraculous. And then at the end of 2019, I made the decision that I was going to undergo psychedelic assisted therapy.
Wow.
And I had my first journey with MDMA.
Okay.
On March 4th, 2020.
Wow. You're like a brand new baby.
11 days before the world completely shut down, here I am getting reborn in every which way you could define that term.
And what kind of, and MDMA, what did you do? What kind of dose did you do? Was it, and what was the experience?
So I have to recall, I think it was the 125. I have to recall the dosing for it. It was the two pill treatment. It was a, sometimes you struggle with the words, right?
You struggle with the words.
It was hard. It was unpleasant. It was 10 years of therapy in 6 hours.
But yeah, it was be so... that sounds unpleasant.
I mean, I sweat through my shirt. I vomited afterwards. It was just... But for those of you who don't know, MDMA is an empathogen, not a psychedelic.
Yeah.
So there's actually no hallucination. It is it's like a lucid dream experience.
Yeah, it's... I haven't done it. I'm fascinated with the idea.
It's an unbelievable compound that's been around for over 100 years. I believe 1916. I think that's when it was synthesized. Don't quote me on that. Don't quote me on that. But the treatment allows you to observe moments of your past that your brain has purposely put a box around to protect you. So in my case, without going into too much detail, there were a series of traumatic events from my childhood that I had no conscious memory of.
Wow.
That set me on a pathway to mental unhealth, right? An unhealthy mental pathway, and all of the cascading dominoes that went from this point in my life.
Wow.
And with this medicine, you basically can search this, you can relive it, and then you can release it.
You can release it.
So you can get your fresh
coat
of snow on your mountaintop.
And you're able to do all of that on something, a trauma that you had actually put behind into the subconscious.
No conscious memory of. Zero.
And you're able to clean it out though as well. Like you really feel like you found it, you looked at it and you went, aha, you.
I will say that healing is a journey, not a destination.
Okay. Yeah.
And the way that I would try to translate my first experience, and I've had a second journey since, and there will be more, is you're on this pathway, there's this big old boulder in front of you, and in your first treatment, you're able to get, you know, you're able to get all the big pieces out of the way and actually start moving forward.
Okay.
And then you continue to work on it. And that's where integration and a whole bunch of important stuff comes from it. But it gets you on this healing pathway.
Wow.
And I was reborn. And so much of my life that I never understood all started to make sense.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, I always struggled with not understanding why I felt certain ways and why I associated certain things and behaviors. This started shedding light on all of that.
Yeah, right.
The important part also to share is, you know, everyone's trauma is different. What might be traumatic to me might not be traumatic to you.
Yes.
What you might remember, I might not.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
So the other area I had to get out of my own head, and for people who are interested in this, is that I used to define trauma, like when I was diagnosed with PTSD, my first response was ridiculous. I wasn't in the military. I didn't save lives and, you know, rescue my troop or parachute into Kabul. I mean, come
on. There weren't any bombs. I didn't have any mortars landing in my trench.
No, I know so many veterans who are heroes, who are advocates of these medicine, and their stories are like, what? But everyone's trauma is different. And there are certain traumas that just carry bigger impacts on people.
I think what your brain records is the time and the circumstances. There's a lot going on in that trauma kind of triangle, right? Of measuring what it is. Like you said, very complex, not easy to make any kind of comparisons. Trauma's trauma for the person.
Yes.
Tell me about your company now. So you've taken, you know, this experience now. You had this one company, you've taken this experience, and now it seems like you're doing something with it.
Yeah. So Momentum Events, which was the company I founded 10 years ago, which is a B2B conference business, primarily in life sciences. I came out of my first treatment, and one of my commitments was I need to use my spiritual gifts to advance safe, affordable access to psychedelic therapy.
Okay.
And how can I do that? I'm not an investor. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a researcher.
Yeah.
I'm an events and a convener guy.
Yeah.
I bring people together like you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can make it fun and I can do an event and
And advance the cause.
And
so we started producing psychedelic related conferences.
Okay.
And bringing together all the communities. And then we were very blessed with an opportunity to be introduced to MAPS. And for those that don't know MAPS, they are Rick Doblin and MAPS are the pioneers, certainly not the only, but probably the most relentless pioneers in making MDMA legal, which, fingers crossed, hopefully happens at some point early next year with FDA approval. And we were selected to be their organizing partner on their big show, Psychedelic Science, which took place this past June in Denver.
Yeah, that's right. Just happened, right?
Yep. We had 12,000 attendees. It was an incredible experience to be the organizing partner with an organization like MAPS that has laid so much groundwork and has done so much for community and access and funding and research and policy. And for me, coming from that, where I had come was, this was amazing. But what, like the boulder analogy, what happens next is where the real change needs to happen. And it's tough to do that in a typical conference business because, you know, you have to hit higher margins and you have to charge what the market will bear and you have to sell your sponsorship and pick your venues. And that's great. Let's keep it going. Pays the bills. Awesome. But what we decided to do was launch a sister company called Momentum PBC.
Okay.
Momentum Public Benefit Corporation.
Okay. Goal, PBC. Okay.
Yep. And the goal of this PBC is to create content to help advance access to psychedelic therapy in a safe and legal manner and do so with conferences and events and live and virtual that is affordable and accessible, where we accept much lower margins. We obviously do need revenue to fund the business, but we do much lower margins. We charge much lower prices and we make it more accessible and we go into underserved markets and communities. So the website online is our for-profit. We're in the process of building Momentum PBC website as well.
Yeah, we've got that up. It's Momentum events.com, and then it'll just be a little PBC after that coming soon.
Yes.
That's kind of interesting. That is a really interesting idea. Wow.
Well, I'll give you an example of what enables us to do. So right now in Kentucky, there is a proposal to allocate $42 million from the almost $900 million Purdue settlement fund that Kentucky got.
Okay.
To fund Ibogaine research for opioid use disorder in Kentucky.
Okay.
Kentucky taking an unbelievable lead position in our country to start supporting with state funds, setting up research sites and conducting clinical trials on the success for Ibogaine to treat OUD. Now, there is research on Ibogaine. There's not a ton, but there's a lot, which goes back decades. But in some studies, Ibogaine has somewhere between an 82 to an 87% success rate to cure an addiction in a single treatment.
Yeah, the one treat. It's like it's very similar to those are numbers similar to ketamine.
But we're talking about
wow, you know, the state is doing this.
The state is doing this.
Whoa, that's and Kentucky. I wouldn't have that at the top of my list for liberal. You know, like that's. That's a very liberal-ish kind of policy, if that makes sense. I don't know if that sounds. I mean, it's very not liberal. It's
non-traditional. Advanced.
Non-traditional. It's very good. Like good on Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome.
And so there's a vote scheduled for mid-November. You know, it looks favorable. I was just there last month and attended the public hearing. But what we want to do is we now want to bring in an event into Kentucky and start educating the people on what is Ibogaine and what is this substance and how does it work and what do we do and how do we go? And so we can bring an event like that under the PBC model to LaGrange, Kentucky, which is not a major market. We could charge only $99 for it because we want to focus on accessibility. And we could hopefully give people an opportunity to realize there is hope coming. For themselves, for people they love,
yeah, that's yeah. This affordability and the access. I don't know the MAPS conference that you ran, but I was invited to do some interviews for some of the VIPs and speakers and partners at one in San Francisco coming up. Mental health, employee mental health. So it's around employees, but it's $1,000 event, 1 or 2 days. Day and a half, and the hotel's $600 a night, San Francisco. I mean, if you don't have $3,000, you can't go. $4,000. It's $4,000. It's corporate money. I mean, that's a corporate event. But so to your point, if you can bring something locally where there's change and you can assist in the education and do it at a level of $100, man, way different.
And that's exactly different right. Model. It's not corporate money. These are practitioners, these are family members, community givers, caregivers. And
yeah, interesting. Therapy. Okay. Yeah, that's who you're going to hit. You're going to hit the people. Yeah. Also, the one to many. So that's going to be the person who can't afford this San Francisco trip, but they've got 100 clients.
Right.
Exactly, I got you. Wow. Genius.
Well, we're trying to serve an unmet need. And, you know, the other thing I'll say real quickly on that is in terms of, you know, our purpose in the market. There are so many people smarter, more experienced than me that are doing such great work. And I mean, you could span the gamut from research to funding, policy change, you know, honoring indigenous communities, the therapy, amazing people around doing that. But I want to speak to the people like me who are on the outside of the movement looking in that might also come from the just say no and drugs are bad and we don't talk about mental health and I'm not going to take a Prozac and therapy doesn't work. Yes. And maybe my religion is an issue. I want to talk to that community in this country and let them know that there is hope. There is opportunity.
Yeah. I love that side, which is it's especially if you saw that at a local level.
Yes.
You're right. You would change the perception that like, oh, there's change in the air.
Yes.
If this is coming at a local level, you would absolutely, that's a, I get that emotion. Spiritual gifts.
Yes.
Pray tell. Newly discovered, something you've carried around forever?
So there is an interesting, probably not interesting. There is a correlation between my spiritual journey and my healing journey. I was born and raised Jewish.
Oh.
And the religion never felt comfortable to me.
Okay.
And my family was not very religious. There was temple and that stuff, but you know, not very, there wasn't a relationship with God or the religious aspects. But my parents certainly were religious. And it never felt comfortable to me. And so as my mental health deteriorated, and I did not have a firm foundation of faith, my Judaism eventually became agnostic.
Yeah.
Right. Didn't believe in any religion, but I believed in God.
Yep.
But when your feet are not on a firm foundation and your mental health slips further, similar to your story, as I can probably assume from your book, you slip into atheism.
Yeah.
Where it's all kind of science and math and randomness, right?
Yeah.
And I became so hollowed out spiritually, my mental health declining, no foundation, and I was suffering terribly. And in my darkest moments of 2014, which were just, for many reasons, a very challenging time, at my rock bottom, okay, Jesus Christ came and saved my soul.
Wow.
And I had an awakening, and people were put in my life at the same time who I had no business being in the same room with, who started sharing the gospel with me and the stories. And that went off like a tuning fork in my brain. And I felt God had sent his son to save me. And I embraced him as my Lord and Savior.
Beautiful.
And I have understood in my healing journey why I was removed from the religion I was raised with.
Oh.
And I understand why I am so connected to Christianity. And that has paralleled my healing journey without conflict, but pure compliment.
Yeah, it's a compliment, right? It is interesting that very few people can go through a psychedelic experience and not believe in God at the end of it, or the universe.
Right.
I mean, you know, like the lightest part of that is you believe in the universe, but you generally just kind of walk away with profound, you know, just comfortable saying, oh yeah, God. Yeah. It's just, it's a thing.
Yes.
It's the thing, you know, and whatever you want to call it. Universe seems too impersonal to me. God seems way more, it does seem way more personal. If you feel like somebody sent, you know, if you feel like God sent his son to you, that then you don't call it the universe. It's going to be, it's way, way, way more, it's way more personal than a corporation, right? Universe is like a corporation, right? But God feels a little bit more like family.
That's exactly right.
It's an interesting thing that you would find Jesus. And I'm sure that moment is pretty profound. And then you take the MDMA. And
yeah, to be clear,
and now, yeah, I, now you see
before every, that.
Yeah, yeah. And so
I didn't do drugs and then found God.
I got it all wrong. Yeah.
Right.
But it's also interesting to see that you found Jesus and you still went ahead with another kind of therapy, another solution, another window you wanted to open. And it's like a window to your soul in a way. I think, you know, psychedelics, you know, a way to peel back your ego layer by layer and really look at yourself, look at your soul bare.
Yeah.
And have a conversation.
Yeah. You know, when you have faith and you have a relationship with God, you tend to see things that come your way as the path you're meant to walk. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, I was meant to walk this path and I was meant to have these treatments and I was meant to be put on this healing path and I was meant to use this rebirth to help other people. And that's not coincidence.
Nothing to coincidence about that. Very interesting. I mean, Ben, great conversation. I would ask you what's next, but it's not a what's next because we know what's next, right? You're on that. You've got that path very clearly laid out. Exciting time for you.
Thank you. I certainly give all the glory to God for being here right now and being able to talk. There were many moments in my life I did not think I would see the next morning. And I have to just, I praise him when it's good. And I thank him for when I have a struggle because the struggle brings me closer to him.
Hmm.
And I would almost turn your words around and I wouldn't even feel comfortable saying what's next for me. It's what's next can I do for my brothers and sisters who are struggling in this world?
Yeah.
And help people and let them know there are things out there that can heal you. There are things out there that can bring you closer to spiritual restoration, mental health balance, free from, you know, some of your traumas, all of your traumas, part of your traumas. There are things that exist, and God willing, they become more accessible and affordable in the years ahead.
There's a really great clip that's kind of floats around a little bit on Instagram, and it's Stephen Colbert and the guy from CNN. I can't remember. He's got the podcast now. And he's asking Stephen about a quote he did on a podcast talking about the struggle, like the things that happen in life, like the real hardships, right? The struggles, and talking about a gift. And he was quoted as saying it's a gift from God. And, you know, and Stephen was kind of saying to exist is to struggle, to be alive is the struggle. Right. And he's like, and to be given these gifts to learn how and overcome and, you know, to triumph over, he's like, it's a gift. And Cooper Anderson, man, you could just see, like, I don't know what his personal experience was, but he was reading the quote and hearing the answer, and it was just crushing him. He was about to bawl like a baby. I mean, it was like because the answer was so powerful to him, because it was, you know, I don't know. Clearly, Stephen Colbert is a Christian, but I didn't realize that. But by that answer, he's a Christian. You know, he's definitely believes in God. And I think I would say probably a Christian. And then Cooper Anderson, it was quite interesting to see how powerfully he was touched by the answer. It's really impressive. Anyway, it's just back to your point of just never know. You never know what people are going through.
Well, and to that point, you know, we live in a very divided world for lots of reasons. We live in a, you know, unfortunately, it's a more fallen world, but we live in a very divided world where people cannot find a lot of similarities. And, you know, you have to realize that, unfortunately, forces are at play that really are taking advantage of people's pain and their trauma.
Yeah.
And so if you can help people deal with their pain and their trauma, we can get to a point where maybe we can all start getting back together on the same page.
Can't we all just get along, right? Let's get back all to that love place. Can't we all just get along? Ben, awesome conversation. Thanks so much. And anybody still listening, again, Momentum Events is a great place to start. You can learn a lot about Ben there. And then you can also, you know, just hang around a bit and you'll find out, you'll see the next part of his business kind of grow. Thanks, everybody. Again, if whatever platform you're listening on, drop down and just give us some nice kind words and a rating. Appreciate that. And then share the episode so this episode and, you know, and others like Ben's can reach more ears. We can, you know, let people know help is on the way. Thanks again, Ben.
Thank you so much. Appreciate this so much.
Stick around for 30 seconds. I'll see you in a bit.
Yeah, loose, baby.
But we're about to go and make this vessel with these great professionals in public glass. We're not part of the community, but we're from the outer family of glass blowing. Yeah, we're going to go make a magical giant jar with optic lenses so that if you turn it, it changes all the time. So if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.